From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Robert Roberson is again counting down the days till his execution.
Here we are again. It's stuff like they gave him another date. And the evidence has shown that I didn't do it, you know. Wasn't even a crime committed, you know, so. What do we have to do to prove it, for get to courts to look at it, to overturn it and stuff, you know? Because, you know, I shouldn't be here now, you know? Been over, what, over 23 and a half years?
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. And with me in the studio is TPR's Vice President of News, Dan Katz.
Thank you for having me on this important story.
Well, Dan, we're digging into a troubling date. We're looking at it, trying to figure out what's going to happen on this coming October 16th.
That's right. That's the scheduled execution date for Robert Roberson. He's a man on Texas death row. He was convicted of killing his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki Curtis, by shaken baby syndrome. And that's the issue here. His conviction rests on that specific scientific theory that's now widely discredited.
So we have a lot to cover even before we dig into Roberson's story. First, I want to explain what we mean by that shaken baby syndrome is discredited. This does not mean that it's okay to shake a baby. Never shake a baby. But we're looking at how shaken baby syndrome is a theory. It has never been supported by scientific evidence or studies. It was put together to help law enforcement determine what happened when a baby is injured or died and there is no outward sign of physical trauma.
In 1971, British neurosurgeon Dr. Norman Gutkelch published an article suggesting that whiplash-type shaking could cause bleeding in the brain in infants, even without external signs of trauma. He was looking for an explanation of cases of infants with brain bleeding when there was no obvious blunt impact injury.
So although it was just a theory in the beginning of the 1970s and the 80s, doctors were trained to recognize shaken baby syndrome as a classic triad of symptoms in infants. They were looking for subdermal hematoma, which is bleeding on the brain, retina hemorrhage, bleeding in the eyes, and brain swelling. The theory was that if a baby showed these three findings, then it must have been violently shaken. Even if there were no other injuries or witnesses, prosecutors used this medical theory to convict hundreds of patients and caregivers of child abuse and murder. It was thought that if an infant had these three symptoms, and just these three symptoms, that this was ironclad conclusive proof of child abuse.
But to be clear, we now know that is wrong. The problem is there are other conditions that can create the classic shaken baby syndrome signs, like minor household accidents. A baby rolling off a couch or a bed or falling a few feet can sometimes cause bleeding and swelling.
Infants born prematurely or with complicated deliveries can develop chronic subdural hematomas that later re-bleed with minor stress. These old injuries can often be misinterpreted as new signs of abuse.
So medical and natural conditions can do it also. Infections like meningitis or sepsis can inflame blood vessels, leading to bleeding in the brain and eyes. Metabolic and genetic disorders can make children prone to brain hemorrhages. And blood clotting disorders can also cause spontaneous bleeds.
Lack of oxygen from choking, asthma, pneumonia, even unsafe sleeping environments can lead to brain swelling and retina hemorrhages that look similar to shaken baby syndrome.
So, Dave, how widely accepted is it that shaken baby syndrome is discredited, or junk science, if you will?
The American Academy of Pediatrics is standing by this theory. I reached out to them for comment. They wouldn't grant me an interview, but they did give me this statement, quote, "There is, in fact, no debate in the medical field that shaken baby syndrome is a real and devastating injury that can lead to lifelong brain damage or death. The diagnosis is now called abusive head trauma to include a broader range of injuries, and is well documented in scientific studies. The diagnosis does not place blame on who caused the injury or why, and that was their statement. It's important to note that the AAP has not commented directly on the Robert Robertson shaken baby syndrome evidence or the conviction.
I get it that the American Academy of Pediatrics wants to protect children. They don't want people shaking babies. But it is interesting that they said, quote, the diagnosis does not place blame on who caused the injury or why, because that's how shaken baby syndrome is used, and it's been proven to put innocent people in prison.
Exactly. Let me introduce you to Josh Burns. He was an airline pilot who was wrongfully convicted in Michigan of shaking his infant daughter. He spent 10 years fighting to obtain official recognition of his innocence.
First of all, let me start by saying I've read the entire trial transcripts of Robert's case, and what the state asserts now is pretty much stuff that's been disputed and discredited on the witness stand in court, and they're holding on to things that are outright lies. That's just the Attorney General of Texas is stating things that have been completely discredited in the court of law. I just don't understand how that can happen. In my case, yeah, it was Naomi was in the hospital for 10 days. They suspected a virus, and then they did a bedside retinal exam, found retinal hemorrhaging. She had a very traumatic birth. So once they found the retinal hemorrhaging, everything changed. So there was just no other explanation. The child abuse pediatrician became involved, and that's just where you become a cog in a wheel, and it's kind of unstoppable.
Burns signed a letter with 20 shaken baby syndrome exonerees calling for the state of Texas to halt Robert Robertson's execution.
An open letter to the authorities in Texas. Robert Robertson stands alone as the only person facing imminent execution at the hands of the government for a conviction based on the discredited shaken baby syndrome hypothesis. But he is not alone in being wrongfully charged and convicted of harming a child. We, the signatories below, face the same nightmare. We all know the horror of being wrongfully accused and convicted of having hurt a beloved child. Some of us sought medical help for having hurt a beloved child. Some of us sought medical help for a sick and injured child only to be blindsided by abuse accusations stemming from hasty, scientifically dubious diagnoses, including shaken baby syndrome. In the cruelest cases, while grieving the loss of a child, we were unjustly charged with murder, convicted, and sentenced despite considerable reasons to doubt the allegations and despite medical alternatives for the child's condition. This is what happened to Robert after he brought his seriously ill daughter, Nikki, to the emergency room. Thankfully, we all secured relief from the criminal legal system after years of heartache, anguish, and despair. We have been reunited with our families and communities, free to rebuild our lives stolen from us by the state. This is what we want for Robert and what he deserves. While many of us were acquitted or exonerated after evidence-based medicine prevailed in court cases, Robert has not benefited from the significant advances in science since his trial more than 20 years ago. Although the shaken baby syndrome hypothesis has been challenged or outright debunked by numerous medical and judicial communities, Robert once again faces execution. How is this possible? His case is an extreme example of the harm that can be caused by medical misdiagnoses of child abuse, resulting from a rush of judgment in the face of tragic and complex medical crises. This is a terrible impasse. Robert's life hangs in the balance. He is scheduled to be executed and put to death by the state of Texas on October 16th, 2025. There is no way to reverse a wrongful execution, but it can be prevented. We implore you to prevent the wrongful execution of this innocent father.
According to the National Registry of Exonerations, there have been at least 34 people convicted based on shaken baby syndrome diagnosis that have been exonerated.
One high-profile case in Texas is Andrew Wayne Rourke. He was exonerated in October 2024, just before Robert was due to be executed last year, after being convicted in 2000 under shaken baby theory. His exoneration was based on updated medical scientific evidence, which the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals said no longer supports the shaken baby syndrome theory in the way that it was used at his trial.
Robertson's attorneys point to this case in their current ongoing appeal. They argue that the science supporting that diagnosis is no longer valid and that newly evolved scientific evidence should have been considered.
And it makes no sense that one Texas shaken baby case is overturned and a very similar one, like Robertson, is going to lead to a possible execution.
To pull this all together, we now know that just because someone brings a baby to the hospital who has brain swelling, brain bleeding, and bleeding in the eyes, that doesn't always mean that baby was shaken violently.
That's right. And they didn't know that when Robertson showed up at the East Texas Palestine Regional Hospital in 2002. He was carrying a collapsed Nikki in his arms. At that time, shaken baby syndrome was treated as a default medical fact, but two decades later, experts are calling it junk science.
So let's hear more about Robertson's story. Dave, you've met him twice on death row.
Yeah, Dan, I interviewed him last year, just before he was very nearly executed, and I interviewed him just last week.
Good morning, morning.
Hey, morning, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, so I'm David. I met you before
David
last
Martin,
year.
Martin
Davies. Yes. So last year when they took you to be executed in Huntsville,
yes,
and they got to stay, but what was that like? I mean, but when you got word, how did you find out that they weren't going to be able to do that to you that night? Well, how did that go down?
That was at 10:08 because that day was a long day after it was over, but then every so often, Hazel would say, hey, you want some coffee or something, you know, we prayed like every 20, 30 minutes, you know, stuff, you know, and that went on all night. Then I had my phone calls with certain people, you know, my loved ones and stuff. It was a stay, then they lifted it or something, somebody lifted it and stuff, then they went to the Supreme Court or something, then last time I talked to Gretchen that night was, she said, I got a deal. So I guess she got with the Texas legislatures and that's what happened there, you know. I was walking back and forth, he said, you can sit down on the bunk. I said, no, I don't want to sit down on the bunk. You know, I was walking, praying, talking to the Lord, you know. So off and on, all night, like I said, we prayed and stuff, and that's all I really could think about my loved ones and stuff. You know, I was walking back and forth praying and stuff, you know, for the Lord to intervene and stuff, you know.
Do you think he did?
Yes, sir. I think he intervened because I believe, very seriously believe, there's been some innocent people that have been executed, you know. Yeah, I believe he did, you know.
And they're still trying to execute,
yes,
you.
Sir.
And so the thinking is maybe this story that we tell will alert the public. People will find out more,
yes,
about how the system has its big problems. Do you think that'll work?
Well, all things are possible, you know. All things possible, you know. So that's what I always believed in, you know, because you don't never what might not work and stuff, you know. So because if you don't try it, you won't know, you know.
So when they told you there was a stay, we're not going to execute you today, we're taking you back to Livingston, what were you thinking? What was your emotional reaction?
I was relieved, not just for myself, but for my loved ones, you know. But they didn't know until I left there or something, or they had told them. I was relieved, not just for myself, but also for my wife, my family, loved ones, and all the witnesses and other people that support me, because and they believe in me and stuff, you know. And I was emotional and stuff, you know. And I think it's Amanda Hernandez. She said, you got a statement or something? I said, I'm still just as innocent, you know, as I was when you put me in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that night out there, I didn't know, because I couldn't see outside. There was more media there than ever, what people told me, you know. But I didn't get to see it, you know.
Yeah. A lot of people are paying attention,
yes,
to what's
sir,
going,
yes,
on. So do you feel like, you know, here we are again? I mean, we got a new date coming up here.
Here we are again. It's stuff like they gave him another date. And the evidence is showing that I didn't do it, you know. Wasn't even a crime committed, you know. So what do we have to do to prove it, for get the courts to look at it, to overturn it and stuff, you know? Because, you know, I shouldn't be here now, you know. Been over 23 and a half years.
In these darkest hours, where do you find your strength?
In God, focusing on God, just the prayer and stuff. Prayer, a little bit of fasting and stuff, reading His Word. I keep myself busy too, you know. Mainly staying in the Word, praying, you know, stuff, you know. Peace and joy, it's through God, you know, I find Him, you know.
So after the execution was stayed, he came back to Livingston. They wanted to bring you to Austin for a hearing.
Yes. They wanted to bring me to Austin. That didn't happen. So they supposed to did it again. It didn't happen because of Ken Paxton.
What do you think, if you had been able to go to Austin and testify and tell people what happened, you think that would have been the breakthrough?
I believe that's what the public wants to hear. They want to hear from me, you know. Me tell my story of what happened that night, you know. That's what I believe.
And so they wouldn't let you do it?
No, sir.
So Robertson's story is complicated. He had won custody of his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki, in 2001. For him, it was a chance to rebuild his life after struggles with drugs in prison. He had committed nonviolent crimes like hot check writing and burglary.
Also, Robertson had been diagnosed with autism. He is non-neurotypical, so he doesn't react the same way that many people might expect in stressful situations. That also led to his arrest, conviction, and death sentence. Many people thought he was acting odd. Possibly he was acting guilty.
Here's Brian Wharton. He was a detective with the Palestine Police Department and arrested Robertson the day he brought Nikki to the hospital.
It's a battle against human nature, I think. There's a certain pace that occurs in the emergency room. There's an urgency. There's just this emotional drive. And, you know, when the police show up and see a 2-year-old girl that, you know, clearly is in dire circumstances and probably going to die, the walls of the tunnel begin to close in. We just need to find the responsible party and make the case. And that's the kind of thinking that gets you in trouble. We're going to make the case rather than we're going to seek justice for this child. And that's what we did. We made a case, and we didn't ask an abundance of good questions.
Wharton now believes Robertson is innocent. He says confirmation bias led him astray. He saw what he expected to see.
But there was immediately an allegation of child abuse. And then at some point along the way, conversation about a shaken baby's injury came into the conversation. And then that would be affirmed after she was moved to Dallas.
Did anyone say anything about Robert's behavior?
Yeah, and that was kind of the way it went. The father's here. We've asked him what's going on. He's given us a story, and he's not responding in the expected ways. And then, when we went and talked to him, that's what we found also.
He now visits Robertson in prison, and he's openly opposed to the death penalty, calling humans, quote, too fallible to carry it out fairly. And he's advocating for Robertson to stop the execution and overturn the guilty verdict.
There were a lot of issues at Robertson's initial trial. His own defense attorney did not challenge the shaken baby syndrome diagnosis. Instead, he conceded it and argued Robert simply lost control.
So the very foundation of the state's case went unchallenged. On top of that came questionable testimony, disputed claims from relatives, an unreliable jailhouse informant, and even an allegation of sexual assault that was later withdrawn.
Despite those really awful cracks, things that could have been grounds for an automatic mistrial, in 2003, Robert was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death.
Now fast forward, the science has changed dramatically. Experts like Kate Judson from the Center for Integrity and Forensic Sciences say plainly, SBS, as it was used against Robertson, is not science.
Robert's case is not about whether shaking can cause injury or whether violent shaking is abusive. There's no question that both are true. This case is about whether doctors can reliably find abuse when a child has a collection of medical findings that are consistent with a variety of causes and in the presence of a separate natural disease process. Here, they committed a grave error that has the very real potential to end a man's life. Nikki's death was a tragedy, but there is no evidence that her father abused her. He committed no crime, and yet he faces the looming threat of execution. We urge the courts to intervene. And while our focus is on the courts, given Mr. Robertson's pending appeals, we encourage anyone with the power to stop his execution to do so. Science proves Robert Robertson did not harm his daughter and that she died because of readily identifiable natural and accidental causes. The Texas courts and the Texas authorities have all of this evidence before them. They must not ignore it and allow an innocent man to be executed.
So what does the state of Texas say happened?
The Texas Attorney General's office now concedes that this case was never about shaken baby syndrome. It now claims it has always been a straight-up case of child abuse, that Robertson beat Nikki to death. I did reach out to the AG's office asking for updated comments about this or interview opportunities, and I received no response. But here's what a juror in Robertson's original trial said about what the case was about. Terry Compton was testifying just last year before the Texas House of Committee on Criminal Jurisprudence. She said the jury was not instructed to consider blunt force trauma as a cause of death.
Everything that was presented to us was all about shaken baby syndrome. That is what our decision was based on. Nothing else was ever mentioned or presented to us to consider. If it had been told to us, I would have had a different opinion and I would have found him not guilty.
And you are one of the jurors that cast a vote to convict him of murder, is that right?
Yes, sir.
What made you feel that he was guilty of murder that led you to cast that vote of guilt for him?
Because Nikki was dead, and from what we were told about the bacon shaken baby syndrome and showing the pictures of her brain with all the bleeding up in her brain, there was no other explanation that was given to us of anything else that could have happened to her.
All right. This is from an official pleading from the Office of the Attorney General when he was asking the Supreme Court to reconsider our subpoena. I'm going to read the first part of this. Before I do that, I'm going to ask you a question you've already answered. Mm-hmm. You were a juror on this case.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to read the first half of this. A Texas jury convicts Robertson of beating his 2-year-old daughter to death. Is that what you convicted Robert of over 20 years ago?
No, sir.
How sure are you?
100% sure.
Who would know better, you or somebody in the office of the Attorney General right now?
Me, because I was in the jury. I was the jury, and I'm the one of them that made that conviction of shaken baby syndrome.
How does it make you feel seeing these statements by the government right now as somebody who lived through every day of the trial?
It has pissed me off very much. Also, too, it has pissed me off about our prosecutors in Anderson County because I heard they testified that this is what it was. And personally, the prosecutors now was not the prosecutors back when the trial went on.
So the state of Texas is continuing its drive to execute Robert Robertson, even with shaken baby syndrome discredited. So what did cause Nikki Curtis to die?
That's where the new medical evidence comes to light that Robertson's attorney, Gretchen Swin, has been trying to use in a new trial. Swin says that medical experts now point to a combination of factors: severe double pneumonia that went undiagnosed, a 104-degree fever, and dangerous medications. Fenugreek and an opioid codeine were prescribed for her symptoms. Both suppress breathing and are no longer given to children today. I spoke to Swin about that.
There were experts who noticed that she was sick, and it seemed to be that the lung tissue was diseased. But finally, in 2024, last year, a lung pathologist, an expert in lung disease, was able to look at the lung tissue collected during the autopsy under a microscope and explain exactly what he was seeing and how this was evidence of both a chronic viral pneumonia and an acute bacterial pneumonia.
There's also evidence that she may have fallen from her bed while struggling to breathe. And critically, the medical examiner at trial never reviewed her hospital records.
One detail is just staggering. The jury was shown photos of what they were told was an impact injury from abuse, but the defense says in reality it was bruising from a pressure monitor surgically inserted at the hospital.
Well, first of all, she was not covered in bruises. The state's own photographs taken when she arrived at the hospital showed she had, you know, some light bruising on one cheek. And then she had a bump on the back of her head. But that was it. The bruises that were noted in the autopsy report were after 2 days of extensive medical intervention. And what we now know is she also had a blood clotting disorder that would explain both the internal bleeding and additional bruises to her that accumulated over 2 days. But even the medical examiner has said the bruises on Nikki were superficial.
So much of what the jury saw as proof of murder was actually explained by natural illness, medication side effects, and medical procedures.
That's what Twin says, especially about the bruising that the Texas Attorney General's office says is evidence of child abuse.
In your coverage of Robert Roberson, you've had a run-in with best-selling novelist John Grisham. He's joining the fight to stop Roberson's execution.
Grisham contacted me. He wanted to meet Roberson, and we managed to bring him along when I met Roberson last week on death row. Grisham is a lawyer, and he's on the board of the Innocence Project. He is writing a new book about Robert Roberson called Shaken, The Rush to Execute an Innocent Man.
It's about raising awareness because you're dealing with public officials here who have so far been unwilling to look at the case. And yeah, it's a kind of last-ditch effort to raise awareness, to get attention, to try to stop the execution.
And Texas actually has a law, often called the junk science writ, meant to give people like Robert a path to appeal when new science undermines an old conviction.
But here's the catch. Texas courts have refused to apply it to this case. Even some lawmakers who wrote that law say they're alarmed that it's not working as intended.
In fact, 86 Texas lawmakers from both parties signed a clemency petition for Robert, and the Texas House Criminal Jurisprudence Committee unanimously subpoenaed him to testify. They've said flat out he almost certainly couldn't be convicted today.
Yet despite that, he still faces execution in just weeks.
What hope is there to halt what many are calling a wrongful execution?
Well, there is an appeal before the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals asking for a new trial so they can include the new medical evidence. Roberson's advocates and attorneys are watching and waiting for a response from the state's highest court that could rule on this. It could reject the request, grant that new trial, or do nothing.
It's unusual that the state would give Roberson a new execution date while that appeal is pending. In fact, it's unheard of.
Which leads many to think that the state of Texas is dead set on this execution, and public pressure is needed to make sure an innocent man is not put to death on October 16th.
Thanks for your reporting on this, Dave. We will stay on top of this story.
Thanks, Dan. And that's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. You can find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.